He is forcing the issue. He's trying to bring it to light. He's trying to get people, i.e. reporters, journalists,
to talk about it,
to do their job and investigate it. You even have Jake Tapper. Lord have mercy.
Oh my gosh. It's comical at this point. I love it.
Welcome to Rivera and Reeves, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin, because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense.
Hey, friends, and welcome to another episode of Rivera and Reeves. I'm Sadie, and I'm here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
Rachel's dying.
Not dying. I just have children who are sick. And so then I'm like, guys, come on. You're fine. You're fine. And then all of a sudden I wake up and I'm like, oh, they weren't fine. They didn't feel great.
Apparently,
feel great.
She has been contaminated with whatever. Yeah. Whatever
we think
children.
it might be the vid, maybe.
It might be the vid. That's it. All right, that's it. We got to put an end to the show.
You could catch us through the computer. I'm quarantined for 2 weeks.
Even look at me, Rachel.
I'm going to start wearing masks.
All right, friends. If this is your first time here, welcome to Rivera and Reeves, your new favorite podcast. We are so grateful that you're here. You're here for news, for levity, for sanity, and lack thereof. But we are so grateful that you're here. If this is your first time, make sure you hit that follow button, give us a 5-star rating because you're already going to love us, and leave us a review because it really helps the podcast grow. And if you don't want to be listening to ads, here's a reminder that you can become a paying supporter on our Substack, where you get ad-free episodes, bonus content, and community
all in one.
That you do that. All right. Besides, it helps a lot. Okay. So what are we talking about today? It was a busy weekend, I guess, yes. Right? Of course, yeah. Not a shocker.
Just I mean, again. In Trump world, from a Thursday to a Tuesday, everything
I mean,
can
usually
happen.
He goes pretty quiet. I mean, he has been going a little quiet over the weekend while he's in Mar-a-Lago golfing and doing his thing. But apparently this weekend, between golf games, he was dropping bombs on the Houthis.
Yep. Did you see the photos of it?
Yes.
It's such a departure from the pictures of old where it'd be
all serious in
Condoleezza
the situation
Rice
room.
Or yeah, Obama or somebody in the Situation Room. Everybody's wearing their nice button-up collared shirts and they're just very, very serious.
This man
and
was in full golf regalia.
You okay? Know, he literally, they hightailed it out on the green in their golf cart and they're like, get in, sir. And then they rush him back. I didn't even see what room they were in. It could have been like one of the big ballrooms for all I know. And
I
he's
no
standing
idea.
There with this like hoopty headset. Yeah, like a janky headset and just watching.
And he was in full blown Trump polo.
Yes.
Trump hat with his own freaking signature on the hat. Who? What?
He does it. It's great.
Well, in addition to that, we also had a deportation saga with the deportation of TDA, which is Tren de Aragua.
Yeah, I don't know how to say it. I'm not going to do it, but I'm going to let you do it.
Those are Venezuelan gang members that were deported to El Salvador. There's a lot of interesting details surrounding that story. So we're going to get into that because there's some misinformation or I hate to say misinformation. There's some because it's just annoying.
I feel like it's misinformation.
It's just
deliberate
omission.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Like omission of information. And then we're also going to touch on the AutoPen conspiracy.
It's not a conspiracy, is it? I mean,
I mean,
it basically happened. Now it's just how do we deal with this?
Well, let me tell you, the media does not want to talk about
this. No. They do not.
What I want to talk about.
Which is also why we're definitely going to talk about it.
Yeah. And the Democrats are having a hard time, especially Mr. Chuck Schumer.
Yeah. He had to cancel his book tour.
Poor guy. But and then we're going to hit some earmarks at the end of the episode. So first, let's get into this deportation saga. Okay.
All right.
If you listen to our unfiltered episode on Saturday, which is exclusive to paying supporters. So if you want to listen to it, I suggest that you join the cool kids. Over there was Trump issued a proclamation or reactivated the Alien Enemies Act from like 17
98, I think.
98 or something like that. Okay. So the Alien Enemies Act, just very simply, is a power for the president to declare that people, it's usually done during wartime. Mm-hmm. Now, I guess you can kind of interpret it that it could expand between wartime or just general invasion, because war has to be declared by Congress. So the administration is making an argument that it was due to an invasion. And so he issued the proclamation, which would allow him the power to deport individuals that are alien, I guess, alien threats to the national security risk. Okay. So that was like, that happened, I think it was like on Friday, like towards the end of last week. And we were all kind of like, what is this about? Why are you doing this? How are you going to do it? Well, now we know, because remember that even previous to that, Trump had issued an executive order, or I don't know if it was an executive order necessarily, but he had declared that, or the administration had declared that TDA, MS-13, and several other Mexican drug cartel gangs were terrorists. So terrorist organizations, all right? So that also gives them a little bit more of a broad sweeping power. Yeah. Now, in addition to that, we have to remember that judges have been attempting to essentially thwart anything that the Trump administration is currently doing. And interestingly enough, things that are specifically within the umbrella of the executive branch. So that's kind of where we're, that's a little bit of background. So now fast forward to Monday, yesterday, there was a hearing held in regards to the deportations, right? Mm-hmm. Now, this is what's interesting, and this is what I noticed that nobody is talking about, okay? So March 17th, which was yesterday, Judge James Boasberg held a hearing about the Trump administration's attempt to deport the Venezuelan nationals, which are illegal gang. Well, the administration says with full and most up confidence that these are all gang member affiliated under the Alien Enemies Act of 1798. The ACLU decided to sue to stop the deportation of five Venezuelans who had been labeled as TDA gang members. So the hearing was specifically for these five members, right? But then the judge decided to issue a TRO. We've all become very familiar with the TRO, which is a temporary restraining order, to stop the deportation of those five Venezuelans. But he decided that in order to stop that, he was going to stop all three, like all of the deportations that were happening within that day.
All 300 of them?
Yeah. I mean, he issued an order that the planes needed to, like, first it was like a verbal order that the planes needed to turn around.
Yeah.
And then he issued like the actual order, right? So during the hearing, he expanded the order to stop all deportations under this act.
Why?
So specifically, I don't know, because he felt like it, because he said it was like a temporary restraining order. So instead of just being like, okay, you can't deport these five guys, he expanding it.
It's just a blanket
to all of to anything that was under this particular proclamation. Okay. Now, I know, which is kind of insane. He just like, you know, said, nope, you can't do it. Not all of the illegal migrants that were being deported to El Salvador, and it's three planes, not all of them were being deported under the Alien Enemies Act.
But they all got swept up in the TRO. But,
well, exactly. Because, I mean, if I wanted to be generous to the judge, all he knows is that there's these three planes that are headed to El Salvador, and he doesn't know necessarily whether these five individuals are on the plane. So he's saying that you have to turn them all around.
Well, shouldn't he kind of know that before he makes a ruling?
Well, my other thing is that you can make the rule. I would think like you can make the ruling and just be like, these five can't be deported because those planes have to come back.
Yeah.
So my thought would be like, you got to bring those five back. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like worst case scenario, let's say they left. Well, now apparently the reports are that the five never left.
No.
Because this case had come up and these five were the mm-hmm. five that were in question, that the administration opted to hold them. So the five were not deported. But this judge said none of these planes can go out. So that was okay. Where that now the debate that is currently happening is whether or not the administration defied the order. Because there is like a question of like...
See, I heard they said that they did not hear about the order until the planes were in the air.
That's the question.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. So it's the time, obviously, look, I'm not going to doubt that, because apparently this wasn't something that just happened. This was a long period where this was being negotiated, because obviously we're the U.S. negotiating with a foreign country to see who they can take, how many they can take. We are paying El Salvador to take them. It's $6 million, which is like a fraction of the price of what it would take to keep them here in the United States.
Yeah.
This is all foreign policy negotiations that are going on. And then you have this district judge that just comes in. This isn't even an appellate court. Do you understand what I'm saying? This is like the lowest level of federal judgeship, that he just comes in and he's like, you can't deport these people that have been categorized as a national threat by the president. You may not like the process. And again, we can debate the process of, were these individuals found guilty and given due process? That's one of the arguments that's being had. However, the president has pretty broad powers when it comes to issues that are national security or a threat, especially when it comes to immigration. Mm-hmm. So there's this whole discussion that's happening about constitutional crises. But it only, notice that the concern only goes one way.
Right.
Because I would argue that it is also could potentially be a constitutional crisis when you have the judicial branch that is,
well, halting the president from being able to do what he has been allowed to do.
Not
they're
only
constitutionally protected. Yeah.
So this is,
I would say if we could go back in time and talk about, if we really want to get honest about what a crisis is, we could talk about how an undue burden and a huge crisis when you flood our country with a bunch of illegal immigrants. That's also a crisis. And so, like you said, it only goes one way. And I think it's just making people really uneasy having to have this discussion. But remember why we're having to have this discussion, because there's an administration that could have at a lot of different points closed the border and chose not to. Now we have to have a discussion where we go from here. And also have presidents that haven't used these powers in a long time for one reason or another. And we have a president who's now trying to deal with this influx of a lot of really dangerous illegal immigrants. What are we supposed to do? And I think that it's really hard for people to have to critically analyze something that makes them uncomfortable. And like just yesterday, and I know we'll end up probably touching on this in another episode, but the visa holder, the doctor who worked at
a Boston University?
Yeah, no, it wasn't Boston University. It was in Boston. I wrote about it last night. See, I don't feel good. This is what happens. I lose my mind. Let's see. From Brown University. She was deported. Well, she was denied entry from Lebanon, and she had gone to Lebanon to go to the funeral of a leader of Hezbollah. And was detained upon coming back by Department of Homeland Security and basically told the CBP officers that she was sympathetic to the cause of this terrorist
organization. Yeah.
The organization had sympathetic, picked photos in her phone and videos and supported the regime, literally said that. And people are still having a really, really hard time grasping the fact that a visa holder, it's not like a right for you to be able to stay here. It is a privilege. And when you break those rules under our law, you can't be recognized as a security threat, and you can be deported or denied
reentry. Yeah.
And it's really hard for people to grasp this. And I'm starting to sense the frustration of the administration, especially Marco Rubio, who's getting on these phone calls with the press, specifically Margaret. Last night he was on with our gal, Margaret, and just, he's like, I don't understand why this is hard for you guys to understand. But what, in his frustration, and he laid it out perfectly, it's not difficult to comprehend why we're doing what we're doing.
No, I think anybody who's here in favor, but we want to get rid of Tren Dar Agua gang members. They're terrorists too. The president designated them, asked me to designate, and I did, as a terrorist organization. We want to get rid of them as well. We don't want terrorists in America. I don't know how hard that is to understand. We don't want people in our country that are going to be committing crimes and undermining our national security or the public safety. It's that simple. Especially people that are here as guests. That is what a visa is. I don't know where we've gotten it in our head that a visa is some sort of birthright. It is not. It is a visitor into our country. And if you violate the terms of your visitation, you are going to leave.
I think it just highlights that these tough conversations, which really aren't difficult to understand.
Here's the wild thing to me, and I was thinking about this yesterday, and I hate to do this kind of, because this is something that was like, well, what if the roles were reversed? Like, if this was a different administration who was trying to keep out some, I don't know, white nationalist obscure group from that had sympathies for, I don't know, from some European country or something, there would be no issue. Literally, we could have almost the exact same.
Just flip-flopped like, on the
details,
other side.
Just flip-flopped on the other side. A different administration and someone who's acceptable to the Democrats or to the left. And they would be like, go ahead, take them out. Leave. And you can make it. I just don't get it.
That's the thing is I think even people who are like, yeah, we get that this is your normal posture because you're a progressive and you have to act sympathetic and compassionate to everybody, regardless of what they've done and how it might impact you directly and your homeland and all of the citizens of your country, whatever. Okay. We get that you have to do this, but when you play dumb, you are refusing to see that this is within the purview of the president's power. That's when it gets me. Well, like, don't make up laws that don't exist. Don't try and act what we're doing is fundamentally unlawful. It literally is written in the law. When it's in black and white and we're not talking about our fuzzy feelings, you know, that make us feel our tummies hurt or it makes us get real twitchy, like all of that aside, that, and that's all bad enough. But like when in black and white, when it is written into our law, why are you arguing about it? Why are you arguing against it? Don't change the law if you don't like it. Like I said in another episode, if you don't care for the law, then go work to re-legislate it, to convince people. But in the meantime, this is what is written. It's literally not right there. It's not hard to understand. I don't know.
I know.
Maybe it's because I'm sick. I have a low tolerance right at this moment. If I was on a video with Margaret... I don't know.
Well, and I just don't, I don't know. I just don't get the, what's the word? I understand.
The outrage. Well, I don't understand that.
I absolutely understand that there is a legitimate concern that someone who is not a gang member or someone
will get swept up and
then end up deported. Now, this question was posed to Rubio about it. Well, how can you confirm? First of all, he said they confirmed this with intelligence, FBI, Border Patrol, who have been tracking people for an extended period of time.
I've seen some concern expressed that there is not concrete evidence that all of the people who were deported to those Salvadorian prisons are confirmed members of Tren Dar Aragua, and there is no recourse if someone was incorrectly swept up. And there's no due process for someone who might want to appeal that. What's your response to that? Is that a legitimate concern?
Well, first of all, I would say that every single person that was on that plane was in the country illegally, one way or the other, in terms of the Venezuelan and the Tren Dar Agua guys. So what was on that plane was MS-13, identified MS-13 criminals wanted for crimes in El Salvador, where they came from. And, when I went and met with President Bukele, he has a list of people he wants to put on trial in his country for committing crimes over there. And he's got a very safe and good prison system. So we sent them on that plane. And then there were these people. Look, we have local intelligence authorities, you know, police departments, FBI, others that have spent, you know, now the better part of a year assembling a roster of known gang members, of people they know are part of Tren Dar Agua. And so these people were part of that list. Now, let's just assume, and I'm not saying this is the case because I think there's high fidelity and confidence that, in fact, that's exactly what every single one of them was. But if one of them turns out not to be, then they're just illegally in our country, and the Salvadorans can then deport them to Venezuela. But they weren't supposed to be in our country to begin with. They were here illegally. They were all here illegally, all the people that are on that list.
So a lot of these individuals were known already to the authorities, mm-hmm. and it was basically just an issue of whether or not the administration would give them the power to do their freaking job, okay?
Right.
The other thing is that specifically with the Alien Enemies Act, specifically, and also when there is a declared national security threat, which you can argue is Trump's way to give himself more power in order to be able to deport people. However, you also have to admit that the Biden administration completely disregarded our laws and just let a whole bunch of people in.
Which one is worse? Seems more like, yeah. Well, and if you think about it, look, I'm glad I'm not going to have to be the judge that has to go through this and figure it all out. Rewind. I actually don't think it's as complicated as people are making it. It depends on what you define as war.
I mean, the legal definition of war has to be declared by Congress.
Correct. Yes. According to the wording, yes, of course, Congress has to declare war. We know that. But the wording of the Alien Enemies Act says that the law grants the president broad authority to detain, relocate, or deport alien enemies during a declared war or when there is an invasion or predatory incursion.
I would say that's happening.
And again, progressives will not agree with that. They're not going to love that wording. They're going to think it's
offensive
and whatever. Oh, fine. I mean, go ahead if that's what you want to think. But it cannot be denied that there was an open flow of illegal immigration into our country for the 4 years that the Biden administration was at the helm. That's just fact. And again, I know that that hurts a lot of people's feelings, but it is what it is. And so, fine, put away that Congress has to declare war. It says, or when there is an invasion or predatory incursion. And there was. And there was of specific people groups. And and so I think that he could very well be justified in what he's doing based on that alone.
Well, today, the next step is because this judge, which, by the way, a little background on this judge, Obama appointed.
That's what I was going to ask next.
So he's Obama appointed. His, I don't know if it's his wife or his daughter is like politically involved. The other thing is that this judge was the judge that was involved in issuing the FISA warrant that was used to investigate Carter Page, which was used to try and investigate the Trump's campaign about the whole Russia collusion situation.
It's all so incestuous. It's all everybody is related to anybody who did any of the things. And they are like trolls that live under bridges and they pop out. No offense to this man. I don't know him. I'm just saying anytime it's like, oh, hey, did you know who the judge was on that?
Let me guess.
I guarantee he's linked to these five people somehow.
Well, you were correct. So the administration's reaction to this has actually been quite, I mean, it's been kind of entertaining.
But when this, a little spicy.
Yeah, a little spicy. So when the order was first issued, I don't know, like a short time after where the news broke about this order, El Salvador's president, Bukele, released a video, a production, of these individuals being removed from the plane, their heads being shaved, being detained, being arrested. He shares the video and he shares it with, oopsie, too late.
So, like he was joking.
I mean, he's responding to the judge's order. So the judge has already issued the order, and then he releases the video, and it's like, hey, sorry, it's too late. They're already here. That is Bukele's response. And then Rubio reposts that.
Wow.
Okay.
I do love it. Can we just say real quick, your penchant for botching people's names? In our show notes, it says Marco Rubino.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, Basady, it's endlessly entertaining. He's been Marco. What's he been? Mario Rubio.
I usually get Rubio right.
Marco Rubino. Hilarious.
So,
but yeah, they were having a, he was having a good time. He retweeted that. It was kind of cute.
I mean, it's then Caroline Leavitt was asked about this during the press conference, because again, the big sticking point is because they definitely want, and I'm not going to say that, I don't know if Trump administration like disregarded the order. The point is that I see the media struggling and really wanting that to be the narrative. Do you understand what I mean? Yeah. They're doing everything possible to now. They're also doing journalistic investigations to see if that's the case. But I also want to point out that there's some other stories that they don't seem so concerned about.
Exactly.
Okay. So they really want this one to be the case. And so she was asked about it, and she said the administration did not refuse to comply with the court order. The order, which was had no lawful basis, was issued after the terrorists, TDA aliens, had already been removed from U.S. territory. So the claim is that the planes were already up in the sky
when they heard,
and that they weren't just going to turn around. People are making arguments that once they crossed a certain point, they were in international
waters.
Oh, I mean, not what air or whatever.
Airspace.
And so the order doesn't apply. There's also because of the fact that he was doing it under the Alien Enemies Act.
Enemies Act, yeah.
So there's a debate. Now, I went and read the Washington Post did some investigating journalistic practices, right? Mm-hmm. And so they were specifically looking into the flight records of these three flights. Uh-huh. And so they reviewed the flight records, and it says the first two flights took off from Texas at 5:26 p.m. and 5:45 p.m. Eastern time, according to data of flight tracking site. Just before 7 p.m. Saturday, Bosberg told the Trump administration that any deportation flights dispatched using the authority should return to the United States.
Okay.
About 30 minutes later, a written order to that effect was entered on the court docket. 10 minutes after that, a third flight took off from Texas. So it's looking like at 5:26 p.m. and 5:45 p.m., two flights had already left. Then at 7 p.m., he issued this dispatch that these deportation flights had to return to the United States. And then it was 30 minutes later that a written order took effect. And then 10 minutes after that, the flight took off from Texas. Now, I don't know if the flight took off. It was, I like, were they taxiing? Were they already on their way? You know what I mean? Did the flight get the information? Do you know what I mean?
I don't know.
It says all three made stopovers in Honduras. The first two flights arrived in El Salvador after midnight. And then the third one landed at 1 a.m. on Sunday. And there's no information that's been made public about the categories of the detainees on these flights. So on whether or not they're a TDA or MS, I always want to say MSG, MS-13. So that's the other detail that they don't know. But to me, it's looking like that.
I mean, it's going to be hard like for them split. To, it's going to be hard for them to prove you saw the email come in.
Yeah.
You know, right before and you decided to take off anyway. I think that's going to be hard for them to.
So the judge is wanting to dig into this. And now today by noon, the administration has to answer some questions. So the questions are, how many planes departed the U.S. on Saturday carrying any people being deported solely on the basis of this proclamation? How many people in that category were on each plane? What foreign country or countries did the planes land in? And at what time did the planes take off from the U.S. and from where? So those are the questions that are supposed to be answered to the judge come noon, because this judge is big mad. He's big mad because he thinks that his order was disregarded. However, my question is this entire thing started with these five people. And the reports are that he kept the five people. I don't understand under what authority this judge can just tell you to, like,
not
deport anybody.
Do what you're doing.
That's wild to me.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall Credit Card Bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
Now, the other thing is that one of the big concerns, or one of the points that was made in this article, Michael Kozak, a top State Department official, said in a court filing Sunday that high-ranking U.S. officials, including Rubio, had been engaging in intense and delicate negotiations in recent weeks with El Salvador and Venezuela, by the way, to deport the TDA gang members. Officials had recently reached an agreement to deport them. So my question is, you go through this entire long process of foreign policy dealings, and if a judge can just come in unilaterally and put
and
a stop to
it, all of it has to stop right
that
now.
That significantly diminishes the power not
of
only
the president
and the executive branch, but then what does that do with your relations when you're dealing with foreign leaders who can be like, well, we don't really have to worry too much about them because their judges hate them and they're not going to let them do half of the stuff that they're proposing to do.
Yeah, their job is severely impacted by activist judges. And by the way, this could work both ways. I think that what we often forget is if you're doing activist-y things and you're trying to, don't break that glass
ceiling or whatever.
It can come back and bite you later. Like it's always, it was like, all the people who are like, filibuster, bad, you know? And then it's their turn to filibuster. And they're like,
the filibuster. By the way, Kristen Sinema has been on a tirade on X about that, because she was the one that got a whole bunch of crud or crap or whatever from like using the filibuster or being opposed to getting rid of the filibuster. And she's, you're not so anti-filibuster now, are you?
Yeah, exactly. She's saying, I mean, it's true.
She's not wrong. So we will see how this pans out. The point is that they have been deported. They are in El Salvador. I have no idea what the process would be to even attempt to get those individuals back. I don't think you can.
But like, why?
Why would you? I don't understand.
Why is this the hill that...
Well, and look, initially when this act...
their flag on.
And time will tell. But when he initially does this proclamation, I was like... I don't know. Like,
I know a lot of people actually, when I posted about it, I was surprised how many conservatives were like, don't love it. It's making me feel weird. I think this could be used the wrong way. And so you're not the only one who was like, I don't know how to feel about this.
But I'm not opposed to using it this way.
Yeah, correct. I feel good about it in this situation.
Like if you're going to be now, the question is you have to be disciplined on how you use it. You can't. I think one of the biggest issues is that the fact that it is tied to the Japanese internment camps is what primarily makes people uneasy. I think rightfully so.
Yeah.
So I get the concern, but we also have to agree that this is arguably an invasion of, like, they are spreading there have been reports of TDA gang activity all the way up, I think, towards Montana or Missouri or something like that. This isn't just happening at the border anymore.
Right.
They have entered, they have invaded the United States of America. Okay. I think we should be concerned about that.
Absolutely.
So we will see what happens and how that develops. Again, follow us. Yes, follow us.
Yes, follow us.
Why does that sound weird?
Am I the only one who's sick?
Make sure that you're following us on our Instagram, where we will be sharing any kind of breaking news in relation to these stories and others. But another one that I want to talk about is the auto
pen. This one makes me mad.
I know this one's going to get you heated.
Okay. Yep.
So it's the auto pen. We've briefly talked about the auto pen during earmarks, right? And now it came to the forefront because over the weekend, Trump posted about this. He did an X post. Okay. This is the X post. It's a little long, but I'm going to go ahead and read it to all you guys. Okay. This is in quote. that Sleepy Joe gave to the unselected committee of political thugs and many others are hereby declared void, vacant, and no further force or effect because of the fact that they were done by AutoPen. In other words, Joe Biden did not sign them, but more importantly, he did not know anything about them. And necessarily pardoning documents, the necessary pardoning documents were not explained to or approved by Biden. He knew nothing about them, and the people that did may have committed a crime. Therefore, those on the unselect committee who destroyed and deleted all evidence obtained during their two-year witch hunt of me and many other innocent people should fully understand that they are subject to investigation at the highest level. I'm out of breath. Okay. The fact is they were probably responsible for the documents that were signed on their behalf without the knowledge or consent of the worst president in the history of our country, Crooked Joe Biden.
He's going for it. Oh, man.
Let me catch my breath. Okay. So that's what Trump said over the weekend. I think that was on Sunday.
It's on Sunday.
He said it. So that was what Trump declared on Sunday. Of course, this generated a huge debate, right?
Yep.
Because pardon powers are powers given to the president by our Constitution. And so you can't, I mean, honestly, this is kind of like the Michael Scott meme of I declare bankruptcy.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right. It's kind of like the last week of Biden's presidency when he decided to, through a tweet, say the ERA was now law. It's like, well, that's not exactly how it works, but thanks for trying. And that this has similar vibes, except for the fact that he's bringing up an important point.
A valid point, I think.
The auto pen has been used by every president. But the difference is that the auto pen has always been used for like routine correspondence, thank you cards, things like that. When you have to write, you know, 75 notes in one sitting. It was just like auto pen. Thanks for visiting the White House. Thank you, Jimmy, for writing a letter to the president, whatever. It's never been a question whether a president was so cognitively impaired that he didn't even know what was going on during his presidency, or he was out of town when certain documents were signed, which is now what we're all having to talk about, because it seems as though Biden was in Delaware when some of the pardons were signed. So who's signing them?
Well, okay.
Did he give power to those people? Did he tell them he can?
I did look into this because I was like,
tell me what you found.
The history of the use of
This is an open and shut case. Yeah. Get rid of the auto pin forever.
So the auto pen was initially invented actually in 1942 and was first used by Harry Truman. Now, the presidents that have used it the most were Kennedy, Ford, Reagan, Bush, Obama, and Biden.
I mean, Biden used it pretty much the entire
time. Almost the entire time. So, okay. I mean, it looks like it was typically used for routine documents like letters, military commissions, and bills when they were unavailable. So, for example, Obama reportedly used the auto pen in 2017 to sign 78 pardon statements while vacationing in Hawaii. And there was no legal challenges at the time. Obama was not 81 years old, and there weren't necessarily concerns about his mental acuity. You may have not liked his politics, but his mental acuity,
there was no question about that.
No, there was not. Now, there was a 2005 DOJ opinion under George W. Bush that states that a bill is legally signed if the president authorizes the auto pen's use.
So that's how they're going to get out of all of this. He's just going to, if ever it went anywhere, which I hope it gets pushed all the way to the Supreme Court, because I think that it is important, even though people think it's another thing that Trump's bringing up that's nonsense. I actually think it's rather important to know who is signing the president's name, why and when, and what authorizes someone to use an auto pen. But they're going to try and act like it's not a big deal. But this is what the excuse that they'll use if it was to ever make it up that high and Biden was, you know, brought in for questioning or whatever. He would just say, I authorized it.
I mean, yeah. I mean, that's what he's going to say.
That's it.
So he would be like, I said yes. He's not going to admit that he didn't know.
Because how sad is that to have to admit, I wasn't in a place where I knew what was happening in my own administration. I have no idea who signed those orders.
The Heritage Foundation Oversight Project is the one that's kind of like really been digging into this. And they compared signatures on various executive orders from August 2022 and December 2024, which showed identical auto pen signatures. Yep. And what's interesting is that Biden's withdrawal, like when he just, remember he posted that screenshot or that image of the I'm out, basically he's like, deuces, I'm out, I'm not running for president anymore. The signature was significantly different, which okay, so this is me theorizing here. So typically the auto pen, what it does is that the president does a signature and then the auto pen copies it and just copies that signature over and over again, but the original signature is from the president.
Yeah.
Now, when you see the signature on this withdrawal letter, there is a vast difference in the signature. So my question is, did Biden sign that letter, or one of the things that show a sign of cognitive decline, especially like Alzheimer's or anything like that, is when writing starts to has like a significant change. For example, like your signature that you've been doing forever. Look, I get signatures vary, but we all, for the most part, have the same signature.
Right. Yeah.
This one was like completely different. I wonder, did he even sign that withdrawal letter? Did somebody sign it for him? Or, I mean, I'm not saying that he didn't want to I don't think he wanted to withdraw. I don't know. I guess you could maybe, if you want to put a conspiracy hat on, you could say that somebody withdrew for him and then he found himself stuck in the position that he can't admit that it wasn't him that did not sign the letter or didn't withdraw.
I think is so hilarious. This is the same type of conversation we've been having over the past 5 years where something happens that feels off. We, meaning people who think about things and want to discuss them before just accepting them as, you know, gospel truth, we ask questions. Then the media, the legacy media, whatever you want to call it, they tell us that we are wrong
crazy
for noticing and that we're crazy. And then eventually it comes out, oh yeah, we were right about that. Or we were at least right to question it because something was off. It may not have been exactly what we thought was off, but something was wrong. And this happened so many times in the past 5 years, but specifically with the president, the former president. Anyone who said and had any questions about his mental capabilities was chastised over and over.
Remember the whole Tapper, Laura,
oh my gosh,
Trump situation? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And going back to the very beginning, his term, his first term, his only term, thank the heavens. I specifically remember just getting so much hate mail when I was questioning his ability to fulfill the duties
again,
of the office.
This weaponizing and, of empathy. It's like, how dare you be unkind?
How dare you notice?
And then
like, oh yeah, we're all noticing.
But we don't want to be mean about it.
And so I think this is one of those things where it'll fade after the next headline comes out and no one's going to be talking about it anymore. And then eventually, like 3 or 4 years, it's going to come out that he really didn't sign anything. And someone else, it was a shadow government, and someone else did it. And everyone's going to go, yeah, that makes sense. Let's move on.
It was actually, did you see the exchange yesterday during the White House press briefing between Caitlin Collins and Caroline Levitt?
I didn't see it.
So Caitlin Collins was asking specifically on this issue.
Good. Thanks for bringing it up, Caitlin.
Yeah. And she was like, well, is there any evidence of that being the case, that he didn't sign it, or that he wasn't the one that was signing these documents, or that he didn't authorize them? And she goes and she says, well, aren't you a reporter? Shouldn't you investigate that?
We're talking about issuing preemptive pardons to these people.
But was he aware of his signature being used on every single pardon? That's a question you should ask the Biden White House.
Is there any evidence on that he wasn't aware of it?
You're a reporter. You should find out.
Okay,
Sean.
I have a question on the...
Imagine that. And I think, and even Tapper reposted Trump's auto pin post or whatever.
Yeah.
And did this whole spiel about how this, that you can't declare this or a decree or whatever. Mind you, he never did that when Biden by
fiat
Twitter
was like, by the way, this is the law of the land now. No, it's not, buddy. Come on.
That's not how this works. That's not how any of this works. Okay.
Right.
So yes, absolutely. Will I say that this post from Trump is basically the Michael Scott meme of I declare bankruptcy.
Yeah
because you kind of, but what he's doing, which is what
he's forcing the issue.
Exactly.
He's forcing the issue.
He is forcing the issue. He's trying to bring it to light. He's trying to get people, i.e. reporters, journalists,
to talk about it,
to do their job and investigate it. You even have Jake Tapper. Lord have mercy.
Oh my gosh. It's comical at this point. I love it.
You even have Jake Tapper, who has been defending going to the mat for Biden's cognitive abilities for years, who is now about to come out with this book. Give me a break, bro.
Yeah.
You're
telling us what we all knew, and then you're going to act like this is outside the realm of possibility. Please. Please.
So I'm very interested in this. I might do a write-up on the whole auto pin and who did what, and
I want to read it.
And I would think, and what I'm interested in knowing more about, which I only briefly looked into, is, are there any parameters, guidelines, restrictions on the
I don't think anybody's had to outline that in the past, because we have not seen a president where it is a valid question at any given time to say, is he with us? Because, I mean, you had people writing up in the most genteel way possible, being like, hey, on any given day, he kind of pieces out at 4. So there's your starting point.
He needs a nap.
There's your starting point. Let's start going back in the history of the National Archives of the White House documents. What things were signed after 5 p.m.
when
every single day?
Yeah, when he had
Let's check on that. Because you had the reporters telling us, the inside scoop was that he needed nap time at 4, and he didn't do any business after 4 p.m. So there's a good starting point. Jump off there.
That's a good point. Look at you being a journalistic.
I'm doing Caitlin Collins' job for her.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so moving on to the end. This one's kind of fun, I think. Bendito. I feel kind of bad for him.
What is bendito?
Bendito is, oh, poor guy. Okay. It's one word for saying, oh, poor girl, poor guy. Or it's bless your heart kind of deal, okay?
Okay.
So Chuck Schumer
is bendito.
Not having a...
I don't feel bad for Chuck.
He's not having a good time. Okay, no. So over the weekend. So we've been talking about a continuing resolution, whether or not the Democrats were going to shut down the government, what was going to happen, right? It was high stakes drama. I mean, as dramatic as those type of things can get, right? The House passed the continuing resolution, and then it went to the Senate. And now the Senate had to go, first of all, through a cloture vote, which is basically the filibuster, where there had to be at least 60 would vote to put an end to the debate. So then they could vote on the bill, which would only require a small majority. So a 51 vote. And with the Republican senators having the majority in the Senate, then the assumption would be that if it went through cloture, it would pass. Initially, Schumer was like, we're not doing this. We're not giving it to them. It's not going to happen. Yeah. But word on the street was, behind the scenes, he was like, we can't shut down the government. We can't do this, because if they filibustered it, it was going to shut down the government, which was a really weird argument, considering that the Democrats have been going to the mat lately about any federal employee who has been dismissed or cut.
Yeah, so it would be a bad look.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden you're just going to shut down the government. The issue on top of that for shutting down the government is that it is all under the president's purview to determine who is essential and who is not. Mm-hmm. Therefore, Trump could come to the determination who's essential, who isn't, and start making cuts. Also, the judges aren't working during that time. So you can't challenge, well, I'm not going to say all judges, I'm not 100% sure, but I know that judges in the DOJ under the executive, it would slow the entire process of trying to challenge anything that Trump is doing, right?
So basically, the Democrats were in a tight spot. It was damned if they did and damned if they
exactly.
didn't.
And so Schumer was making that. Finally, the next day or whatever, in the span of like 24 hours, Schumer took to the floor and he made that argument. He was like, look, we can either fight it now or end up having to fight it later. If we shut the government down now, it's going to put more power in Trump's hands, which is going to be a significant more negative. And he's right. I think
you don't have to like it.
Yeah. In my opinion, this was politically, for the Democrats, the wiser of two bad choices. If I'm a Democrat, I got two bad choices, and this is the least bad because yes. at least gives them some time to battle it out with the administration,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Well, the most progressive wing of the party is not happy about it.
No.
And in fact, almost everybody, you had Hakeem Jeffries, which is the House leader, mm-hmm. who didn't blatantly say anything negative about Schumer. He was asked about it and he was like, no comment, moving on. But yeah. he did not support Schumer. He clearly stated that the House Democrats were not going to be voting for this, that they were not in support of it.
Yeah.
You had AOC out there making the rounds, also speaking about
she
it.
She was big mad.
She was
like, she was
big, big,
very
mad.
Clear in her disdain for she didn't say his name. She just said, this is not what leadership looks like.
Yeah. So, and then Bernie Sanders also is not happy about it. Elizabeth Warren, she's like, we need a leader who will stand for working families, not one who will compromise our principles for political expediency.
Wow.
Bernie Sanders, this is a failure of leadership. We need to invest in our people and not maintain the status quo. There's also calls for AOC to primary Chuck Schumer, which okay. I'm like,
that's a choice.
Yeah, but I think he has like another 3 years, 4 years or something like that before his term is up. So there's plenty of time
yeah.
for her to do something, but it's not like it will be any kind of solution in the immediate. Do you know right. what I mean? And I also, there was recent polling done by CNN. Uh-huh. And on who do you think is do Democrat voters align with? Who is the leader of the party?
Yeah.
And the winner was AOC with only 10% because over 30% couldn't name anybody.
Wow.
Okay.
That's how ineffective they are right now.
Well, and I don't necessarily understand. Again, it's just a symbol or a sign of how the Democrat Party is still being led by the most progressive, left-leaning faction of their party.
And they're not even that popular.
Well, they're definitely not popular enough to win an election. Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's, again, the fact that they're having such a reaction against Schumer and what he did mm-hmm. is, again, just like this whole narrative of do something. Just yeah. do something. Just yeah. be in opposition to be in opposition.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And there's no discussion about, you don't have to agree with everything that the Republicans are doing, but there are portions of the Republican current policies that are popular.
Yeah.
And I don't understand this compulsion that is coming from the Democrat Party to just oppose everything. And take the 20% versus the 80% side.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to learn anything from this.
It's like a sunk cost for them. They feel like they've already put in so much fight when it comes to certain, especially the culture issues, that they're not going to give it up. And to their demise, like, they're going to continue to lose. They have to race a little bit more towards the center. You have someone like Gavin Newsom doing that on his podcast.
Which is not going well for him on either side.
No, it's not, because Republicans, rightfully so, don't trust him. And Democrats are like, okay, traitor. So they're in a tough spot.
Well, Schumer is supposed to go. The timing for him is just horrible.
I know.
Poor guy.
He had a book.
He has a book that's coming out, The Path Forward. It's supposed to be also about one of the issues in the book that he discusses is the rise of anti-Semitism, which I think is kind
of really interesting.
Interesting coming from Schumer. Like, I know that he's Jewish, but also we have to admit that he's...
Well, he's the head of a party that
is like...
I mean, anti-Semitic.
Yeah, that like, is has
lots of factions. That are very much opposed his thoughts when it comes to how to treat Jewish people.
Yeah, like, for sure. But he's supposed to go. The challenge with him, with this happening and him having to go on a book tour is that, by the way, he has canceled the book tour allegedly over security concerns because the left wing of the party is just so rational.
Yeah, right.
And so logical. And wanting to engage in debate and conversation,
you have like spray paint Teslas that are in the parking lot.
Like, you have the leader of the Democrat senators is concerned about his security. However, yeah. Today, he's supposed to be on The View. And Whoopi Goldberg yesterday specifically was like, well, we're going to have to ask him about this. Oh, so okay, it should great. Be.
Can't wait for those clips to come out.
An interesting exchange on The View today between Schumer and the very reasonable ladies on that panel. So he's just not having a good day. I honestly, if I were to be like, as much as I want the Republicans to, obviously, I want a Republican to win. I want them to have control of the House and the Senate, the presidency. I want to win. Duh. Obviously. But you have to admit that it is good for a party to have a solid opposition, like a reasonable, yeah. logical opposition to keep, like, we keep each other in check.
Yeah.
And it's almost unsettling that they're as in the disarray to the extent that they are. Do you yeah. know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because it's unsettling because I'm concerned about the desperateness that's kind of bubbling up to the surface that we're starting to see. Like we've talked about this a little bit on the back channels. But you're starting to, you have Schumer now is concerned about his security. You have, there's videos all over the place all of a sudden of just random Teslas being keyed in parking lots. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you have dealerships getting Molotov cocktailed. You have people being harassed while being in their vehicles. Like, it's not great. And I just see this faction of the party starting to bubble up. And the question is, with the summer approaching, what is going to be their reaction? Are we going to see, is there going to be something that's going to tip it to where we end up with riots again over yep. the summer? And then yep. on top of that, my concern is only that, not that I'm opposed to this, but if we were to have riots again over the summer, Trump is not going to be as passive this time around as he was the first time around.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what does that look like? How does that develop?
Looks like a mess is what it looks like.
I don't know. So I would say either. A nice little prayer.
Send those prayers for a peaceful
summer.
I don't know what's coming our way.
I know. We'll see what happens. But I definitely will be sharing some clips on The View today because yes. I want to see
I will wait for those as I lay infirmed in my bed. The only thing that will make me smile is Sunny Hostin being righteously indignant with Chuck Schumer.
I know.
I just can't wait.
Good times. Now, we got some earmarks to wrap up
today's earmark segment.
So these are all the stories that happened that we think you need to know about, but we don't have time for.
We just don't have time to go into it. But some of them are kind of cool. Like, for instance, the SpaceX rescues the stranded astronauts. Because if you'll remember, the Biden administration left a bunch of astronauts in space.
They won't say that. They're so politically wise, let me put it that way. Because the astronauts were specifically asked this question and they were like, no, that's not what happened. Look, what happened was
you were stranded.
Elon
had to come rescue you.
Well, the administration could have given the contract or asked either Boeing or SpaceX to help get these astronauts back. They chose Boeing. Because honestly, you didn't want to give SpaceX that kind of publicity, right? During the election, and Boeing failed because Boeing has not been doing so great, which was really sad because they were like a major U.S. company in aviation and now they're not doing so well.
Nope. But after 9 months, which is just wild to me, they were supposed to be there for what? Like
8 days.
Or 10 days, 8 days. So, Butch Wilmore and Sunny Williams, who have been stuck on the International Space Station for over 9 months, are set to return to Earth today, thanks to Elon and SpaceX Crew 10 mission launched last week.
Did you see the video that somebody dressed up as an alien while they were boarding the space station?
No, I did not. I love that person.
I don't even know who it was, but I was scrolling my feed and I'm like, is that an alien? And I thought somebody had made the video like as a joke. No, it was one of the astronauts.
I like that. That's my favorite astronaut. Okay. Next earmark. Swatting targets conservative influencers again. So there are a lot of, if you've been on X, there's a lot of prominent right-wing influencers who have their houses or their families' houses have been swatted. And I have found the most helpful account to get information from regarding this is Data Republican.
Yes.
Again, she put together a compilation of the names and accounts of all of the people who have been swatted or had their houses, family members' houses swatted. And she put together basically a list of what their similarities to one another are. And so you could kind of get an idea of
who's potentially doing this.
Yeah. And what they're targeting, basically proximity to Elon, certain amount of followers. And then she also kind of projected who she thinks is going to be next.
So if you're not familiar with swatting, what happens is somebody will call local law enforcement and they'll say at so-and-so's house, they are holding someone hostage, or it's a domestic and they have a gun on their wife, or they're threatening to kill their family. And that triggers the SWAT team to then come to your house and bust the door down. And the problem with this is that it is incredibly dangerous because obviously the individual that is in the house doesn't know that it's law enforcement trying to break into their home. So if they're mistaking it for it being an intruder, they could engage to protect their home, which would then lead SWAT to go and kill them. So it is a very, very dangerous situation that is happening. And it has been, there's been a flood of them over the weekend on right-leaning creators.
Yep. So that's something to keep an eye on. The next earmark is that Trump orders weekend strikes on the Houthis in Yemen, which we acknowledged at the top. That's when he was in his hand-signed Trump hat watching that. But yeah, President Trump launched a pretty big U.S. airstrike on the Houthi targets, Iran-backed, in Yemen. It killed at least 53 people in response to their attacks on Red Sea shipping.
Now, also worth pointing out that wasn't mentioned here is that when he issued these strikes, he is saying specifically that any of these, because Iran does this by proxy. And so the practice has been going after these groups, the Houthis. However, Trump has specifically stated that if the Houthis continue to do strikes, the administration is going to be assigning blame directly to Iran. So by the Houthis acting out, it's essentially that Iran's acting out. And the big concern was is that because they were blocking the Red Sea shipping, that increases our costs. It's also a national security issue. And it was forcing these ships to go around Africa, which was a concern because there's pirating situations on the Horn of Africa and everything, or the southern point. And it makes things more expensive. And it makes things more difficult to access to get to the United States. Mm-hmm. While that's happening, I think it's also worth mentioning that the ceasefire ended in Israel, in Gaza, and Israel has been literally dropping bombs on Gaza.
Yeah.
So everything's activated right now in the Middle East.
There's just a lot happening over there. It's a tinderbox, which leaves me feeling
super
all warm
excited.
And fuzzy.
Yeah. That's a sarcasm. And then finally, today, Trump is supposed to be having a chat with Putin about the ceasefire that is being negotiated between Russia and Ukraine. Ukraine says they're open to it. Putin has shown signs of also being open to it, but conditions still need to be addressed. So we will see what happens after this phone call today, which is kind of a big one.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
We'll see if things pan out. So that's it. Other than that, really nothing's happening.
Nothing.
Nothing
boring.
Big. No, did I miss anything on the earmark thing?
No, I don't think you did, but.
No, maybe. But give it 15 minutes.
Yeah. Seriously.
So that's it. That's all we have for today's episode of Rivera and Reeves. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. If it's your first time here, congratulations. You have found your new favorite podcast, and we hope to see you again on Thursday for another episode of Rivera and Reeves. Make sure you hit that follow button, give us a 5-star rating, and leave a comment because it helps the podcast grow. And if you don't want to be listening to those ads, click the link in the show notes and consider becoming a paying supporter so you get all the bonuses and give us a little bit of support too in the process.
That's it. I'm going to take a nap.
You're going to take a nap? Please recover.
Oh, I want to take a nap. I can't take a nap. I have 4 kids in my homeschool. There's no nap. I'm just going to get another cup of coffee.
You can do this.
I will. All day.
All day, every day.
That's what we do.
All right, friends. Well, we're out. That's it. And thank you so much. And here's a reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. Okay. Bye.
Bye.